Hello there. We are glad you could join us for our Anchored podcast today. I'm Kaylin Goble of the OneOp Family Development Team. Like all programming from our OneOp network, this podcast creates a space for conversations on topics relevant to service providers working with military families and within our military communities. We hope our episodes help anchor you and your work as you listen and consider how our conversations and content can influence, improve, and strengthen both your professional and personal growth. So I invite you to sit back, relax, and get anchored with us today as we are joined by our colleagues at the National Center on Sexual Behavior of Youth, NCSBY for short, and the Department of Defense Family Advocacy Program, DOD-FAP, who have been essential in the development of our Sexual Behavior in Children and Youth series, and are both a big part of our series' future programming. This episode is also co-hosted with my fellow family development team member, Jason Jowers. Our two guests joining us today are Dr. Jane Solofsky, Professor and CHF Jean Gummersman Chair, Director at the Center on Child Abuse and Neglect, and the Director of Research at the Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics within the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. Our other guest is Mary Tibb Campese. Tibb is a licensed clinical social worker and associate director of the Child and Youth Advocacy Program and Military Community Advocacy Directorate within the DoD Military Community and Family Policy Office. Most of our audience will be very familiar with the Family Advocacy Program, but for those not familiar, FAP is the DoD agency tasked with the prevention, response, and intervention of military families who may be at risk or have experienced child maltreatment or family violence. OneOp, formerly known as the Military Families Learning Network, has worked closely with both teams for the Sexual Behavior in Children and Youth series over the last 3 years, bringing in experts from across the country. This collaborative work emerged from a need coming out of DoD and amongst our FAP practitioners. In February of 2020, our then Family Development Principal Investigator, Dr. Casey Mixon, and National Project Leader, Dr. Sarah Boffman, attended the NCSBY's annual conference. They presented our OneOps grant collaborative work with producing programming for a DoD audience, specifically on emerging research and the need for practitioners to have guidance on sexual behaviors in child and youth populations. Jane and Tibb join us to dive into our new SBCY series offerings, which will be in the form of 4 new courses. We discuss the next steps in our continued collaboration with our colleagues and our work in the SBCY series to promote youth empowerment and family health. For more information on our overall SBCY series of webinars and programming, and to obtain free continuing education credits for those sessions, visit our SBCY series homepage at oneop.org/child sexual behavior.
Hi, Jane and Tibb. Thank you both for joining us today. For a little behind-the-scenes insight, we meet monthly with both Jane and Tibb and our greater OneOp leadership team, the NCSBY, and our DoD teams, our subject matter experts, to discuss areas of need and processes of support as we work together to create this series content. We're very excited to have you both here today, and we just wanted to kind of do like a official, unofficial kickoff to the series and ask you guys, you know, a few questions and kind of how this series came about. So to start with, Jane, I'll ask you, can you tell us a little bit more about your professional experience, your role within NCSBY, and more so your daily work when it comes to the subject issue of children with problematic sexual behavior?
Thank you, Jason. Good morning. Very excited to be here today for the kickoff of this great series. I'm Jane Solofsky. I'm a clinical child psychologist and a professor at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. and I have the privilege to be the director of the National Center on the Sexual Behavior of Youth. And this work at the OU Health Sciences Center began in the 80s with Dr. Bonner, who began our programs for youth with problematic sexual behavior. And I've actually been directing our school age and preschool program for kids with problematic sexual behavior since the 1990s. And then had the privilege of being awarded an Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention grant to be able to provide training and technical assistance to teams across this country who are addressing problematic sexual behavior of youth. So my day is mixed, a lot of training, research on the topic of problematic sexual behavior, and I continue the clinical work. And I'm told by my family that I'm usually the happiest when I come home Tuesday evening after doing our group for preschool kids with problematic sexual behavior.
Thank you for that. And Tib, do you mind doing the same? Tell us a little bit more about your professional experience, your background, and your role and daily work within the Department of Defense.
So thanks, Jason. I too am looking forward to the launch of this new course. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I work for the Department of Defense since the early 90s, believe it or not. And I started in the family advocacy program, started as a clinician, and then I became a service headquarters POC for the family advocacy program, and then moved to OSD, the Office of the Secretary of Defense and Military Community and Family Policy, in 2007. I have been working largely in the family advocacy program, which deals with domestic abuse and child abuse and neglect. But in fiscal year 19, in the NDAA, we were required, the Department of Defense was required to stand up a reporting and response capability to problematic sexual behavior in children and youth. When that happened, I moved over to spearhead that effort, and we established a new office called the Child Youth Advocacy Office under Military Community Advocacy Directorate, and that's where I am now.
So it sounds like you both have worked your way into basically getting more involved in this topic area of problematic sexual behavior for children and youth. Can you both tell me kind of how you got more involved with just the collaborative effort with our one-op organization and kind of like the support you guys give to our team as well?
So our collaboration actually began shortly after the fiscal year 19 NDAA was released. And we became the reporting point of contact, or the policy development point of contact, for problematic sexual behavior in children and youth. And because I'd had experience previously with ONOP, which was at that time Military Family Learning Network, I was able to jump in to that relationship to leverage the expertise that ONOP has to develop really good quality training through your webinar and podcast series. So that's how we got started. And ONOP has been tremendously helpful and supportive in not only helping us to identify who the subject matter experts are that could be our presenters and speakers in the podcast or the webinar series, but you all also have the capability of shepherding that relationship in such a way with the speakers. You make it so easy, so comfortable for the presenters, and it's so professionally done, so deeply appreciated.
Thank you, Tib. We really appreciate the collaboration you give us within the DOD and like pinpointing these specific topics and getting us in touch with subject matter experts. And speaking of subject matter experts, Jane, that's kind of how your team got involved. Can you tell us a little bit about how NCSBY started collaborating with ONOP?
Yeah, I'll echo Tib's enthusiasm around the collaboration among us. It has gone seamlessly. It's just gone very well. I've been quite impressed with how the Department of Defense has approached addressing problematic sexual behavior of youth once it was identified. One of my interest for the National Center on the Sexual Behavior of Youth is really being able to look at how our community and systems and policies need to be updated and consistent with what we know in the research of best practices, and have worked with communities across the country in really examining their policies and being able to update it to have a developmentally appropriate and evidence-based approach. And so when I learned about the Department of Defense, I've been awed by how such a large entity across the world can systematically make these kinds of improvements and changes in ways that I see it take much longer in typical communities across the nation. So I've learned this through the collaboration. The Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention reached out about the potential to collaborate as a subject matter expert on problematic sexual behavior of youth and being able to train multiple professions about the topic, understanding child development, when is it a problem, how to approach the families in a way that facilitates engagement and change and improvement so that the impacted child is getting the healing they need and the exhibiting child are getting the treatment that they need. And so was able to be part of this collaboration and learned about Military Family Learning Network, now ONOP, and the work that you were doing in your webinar series. And it's been a great collaboration because we have subject matter experts, but not the expertise in really being able to create those webinars and have it so readily available to military personnel. And ONOP has been incredibly organized and welcoming in each of the webinars, such that each of our team members have been able to present on a variety of topics to be able to support the military's addressing problematic sexual behavior of youth.
Our family development team has had a great partnership with you all over these past several years. Fittingly, this SBCY series began in 2019 with a podcast episode on problematic sexual behavior in children and youth, featuring Dr. Gregory Leskin of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress as our guest. That episode discusses the natural process of childhood development of self-exploration, curiosity, and the importance of age-appropriate development of sexual behaviors. Then we began to bring in skilled experts on sexual behavior of children and youth. And our first webinar with the NCSVY team was in 2020. NCSVY trainer Dr. Aaron Taylor joined us to present on modeling healthy technology behaviors for young children. As defined throughout the series, problematic sexual behaviors, or PSB, are behavior initiated by children and youth under the age of 18 that involve sexual body parts in a manner that deviates from normative or typical sexual behavior. These behaviors are developmentally inappropriate and/or potentially harmful to the individual initiating the problematic behavior and/or to others potentially impacted. NCSBY defines PSB as youth-initiated behaviors that involve sexual body parts, including genitals, anus, buttocks, and/or breasts, but could also include other body parts such as the mouth, hands, etc. They are developmentally inappropriate and/or illegal behaviors. These sexual behaviors are defined by local and/or national statutes. Behaviors can be potentially harmful to the child themselves or other youth that may be impacted. These behaviors are not a diagnosis, but are clinically concerning. The SBCY series has covered an array of topics, themes, and resources relevant to problematic sexual behavior, providing programming overviewing the spectrum of normal to cautionary to concerning sexual behavior in children and youth, covering developmental stages, focusing on how typical social, emotional, cognitive, and moral development of children and how maturation across ages informs expected and developmentally appropriate sexual knowledge and behaviors. cultural responsiveness, and the influence of diversity on families and youth impacted by problematic sexual behavior. We've also focused on the juvenile justice and court responses. We've also provided directions in prevention and treatment, and evidence-based prevention programs and treatment programs that are being implemented to prevent further problematic sexual behavior directed towards younger children. We've also looked at how technology impacts and shapes sexual behavior in children that may be exposed to, display, or exhibit concerning or problematic sexual behavior, and how adults can educate and empower youth to take action to end or mitigate technology-facilitated abuse. You can see each of the webinars available under these topics on our series homepage.
Speaking of these different topic areas, if both of you could kind of give us a general idea, like we know we've had various topics in the SBCY series leading up to this course series. How does DOD family advocacy policy and how does NCSBY like kind of nail down the specific topic areas? Is it mostly coming from cases that clinicians are seeing, or, you know, is it something that's primarily coming from the field, or is it just something that we're seeing from data or statistics? Where do those specific topic ideas come from?
So I can start with that one. You know, I keep going back to the fiscal year 19 NDAA, which required the department to, you know, expand our focus to problematic sexual behavior, and it identified the family advocacy program as the reporting point of contact. So anytime the NDAA requires an expansion of scope or an expansion of responsibilities, we know that there's going to be a training tail. As I mentioned previously, recognizing that we were going to have this need and it was going to be an immediate need, we reached out not only to ONOP, which was Military Family Learning Network, to build webinars to support those training needs, but we also, as Jane mentioned, established this interagency agreement through the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention to gain access to be able to leverage the civilian experts in the field, because this was a brand new topic area that we were grappling with as a department, but also as a family advocacy program. So the topic areas were identified through our conversations with the civilian experts because they had so much experience. And when I say civilian experts, I'm really talking about the National Center for the Sexual Behavior of Youth, who we have the DIAA with, which was the breadth and depth of experience and expertise was incredible. And it was just what we needed. So because they had done considerable training in the civilian sector, we just piggybacked on what they had discovered in their interactions with civilian agencies, and in particular, the child advocacy centers. So we did get feedback from some of our social workers in the field who were working in family advocacy programs, who were primarily working in the field of child abuse and neglect. But even so, this reshaping, it really required this paradigm shift from looking at behaviors that are initiated by adults to addressing behaviors that were initiated by children. And it's a significant paradigm shift. It really does require training to help the clinicians make that very important shift in perspective. And so that's how we developed or identified what some of the topic areas might be through our conversations with Jane and her team and with others in the field.
Thank you, Tib. In terms of thinking through what topics to address and how to build upon that information, we did take our learning from the civilian communities. What we're finding is that most professionals and lay people are making decisions about these youth based on myths, because there's not a good network of information typically out there and policy to support accurate understanding of youth, where this behavior comes from, and how to address it. So commonly, people think about the children as if they are adults with pedophilia or abusive behaviors. They may misunderstand causal factors and assume that sexual abuse is always to play in the situation, and may assume that for youth that have problematic sexual behavior, intensive years of residential care is needed in order to address it. And so a first step in making change is being able to support the community and decision makers to have accurate understanding of this population and their responsiveness to prevention and treatment approaches. So the series that we've done so far with OneUp provides an excellent foundation of information about child sexual development, adolescent development, cultural factors, and being able to know how to approach the youth and the caregivers in a way that help dispel those myths and then engage them in the services that are needed. As we were rolling these webinars out and hearing more from the field and policies were rolling out for FAP, what we were hearing from the clinicians is wanting more specific information related to assessment and treatment responses. And so for the asynchronous learning series, there was a desire to really dive into those topics.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what we've seen in our feedback as well from all of the webinars. We've been doing this series for 2.5 years, 3 years coming up on. It's been going for a good long while, and we continue to have engaging topics and engaging ways of looking at this issue all around from, you know, in a very systemic way. I appreciate the feedback that y'all have gotten on y'all's end, and, you know, hopefully we get more positive feedback going forward with these asynchronous courses we're putting out within the next few weeks. Can each of you kind of talk about, you know, how we started this course idea and kind of where those beginning seeds started of this content, and more so giving an overview of what the assessment and treatment process could look like? Because we've talked about more so general topics, but we haven't talked about specifically what this looks like in a clinical context. So can y'all both speak to that?
Well, Jason, I think that the webinar series, which was just outstanding, gave the audience really good, solid introductory and broad information on addressing problematic sexual behavior in children and youth. And although we did webinars on assessments, and we did a webinar on looking at PSV through a clinical lens, we recognized that we really needed something more for our clinical audience. So the webinar series really, I think, reached that broader audience, certainly within the family advocacy program, but also in our DoDEA schools, in our child and youth programs. There was something in that series for everyone. And right, even if you weren't a clinician, you could tune in and hear more about what is this phenomena that we're calling problematic sexual behavior in children and youth, and what's the best approach. And I really appreciated that throughout the webinar series that we really emphasized what Jane mentioned earlier about the importance. I keep going back to the paradigm shift, the importance of our response needs to be developmentally attuned, trauma-informed, and based on the best available evidence. And so the webinar series, I think, really brought people sort of up to speed with the broader category. But so we recognize, though, that the family advocacy program, those clinicians who would be involved in actually taking these referrals and doing initial assessments, taking information to our multidisciplinary team, needed something a little bit more. They needed something a little bit more clinically focused. And of course, we turned to OneUp. You all did such an outstanding job with the webinar series to help us think about, okay, how can we do this? How could we have something that would be similar to the webinar series, but really tap into the learning needs of the clinical audience? And of course, we, through the IAA, we had access to Jane and her team as the subject matter experts, and even broader beyond that, the larger community of which NCSBY is a part of could tap into that expertise as well. And it just seemed like a perfect fit to develop this next level of training that's designed more specifically for our clinical audience.
I think that's the biggest piece of it, is to diving more into the how-to when you have a family or a client sitting right in front of you, going through, you know, what would I do as a clinician in this scenario?
I was just going to hop in, Jason, just to kind of continue on that piece in terms of the courses for our perspective and for our audience. We're very excited to be taking that next step, as Tib was talking about, from the webinars. And like you were saying, Jason, making this more application-based. And through the courses, we're also incorporating a case story that as you work through each of the courses, a case story will unfold with you, just like you would be in your office working with a client. And as those pieces are revealed to you, and as you learn more about the family and the history and other children that have impacted the child, we look forward to those pieces being a part of the courses, as well as our clinicians and participants take these professional development programmings that are intended to help them advance their learning on this topic area. And then also hopefully open up the door if there is additional formal training that they need or they feel would better strengthen their work with families to lead them in that direction so that they can find the appropriate trainings and assistance and information that they can obtain to strengthen their work. And one of the major things for us, for OneOp, in terms of these courses, is that they are self-paced and sequential for our audience members. So we know that the majority of our audience members are working clinicians who have 8 to 5, if not a lot of even more additional time throughout the week, not just 40 hours, but more time dedicated to helping families, helping children. So we also are very excited for these courses, for the opportunity for our participants to log in and take the courses at their own pace throughout their day, whatever works best for them, and then to come back and continue on with their lessons as they build through each of the 4 courses sequentially. These courses, they have been created collaboratively with amongst our course authors to flow together for clinicians and for our practicing professionals, so that course 1 flows into course 2, course 1 talking about engaging the individual and the youth that is exhibiting the problematic sexual behavior, and then going into course 2, which delves a little bit more into the caregiver engagement and how important having that strong caregiver connection is for the youth as well as the full family.
And now we will hear more from Kaylin about the SBCY series as a whole, which has been ongoing since 2018. She will share with us some of the great participant feedback that we have received over the years of this amazing series.
Through this series, we have educated and empowered clinicians assisting children and families impacted by problematic sexual behavior, informed caregiving adults on this topic and the age-appropriate development of children and youth, and provided insight into community resources and treatment possibilities. We have received rich feedback from our FD audience that has continued to assist us as this series has grown. So we wanted to share some of our audience input and thoughts on the series. From our Understanding Children's Sexual Knowledge and Behavior from a Developmental Perspective webinar, our audience learned about children's sexual development and the different stages of development depending on their age. One attendee noted that this webinar was significant because, quote, "It helped me understand the children's life experiences and the different ways they learn, and that by attending the webinar, they feel strengthened in their work to, quote, be able to understand children's stages and how to intervene when assisting them," end quote. In our juvenile justice responses to youth in conflict with the law webinar, the focus was on the purpose, processes, and goals of juvenile courts. It was significant because, quote, "I really did not know much about the juvenile court, so knowing what to expect when a youth goes through that was good. I will apply to help clients going through these cases, as well as making sure clients get fairness and equal opportunities while being represented," end quote. This series has also helped shift practitioners' perspectives. As one of our participants from Preventing the Onset of Youth Problem Sexual Behavior noted, This session was significant in learning, quote, the importance of remaining hopeful that education will combat some of the issues related to problematic sexual behavior. I've not been viewing PSB from the perspective of not seeing the child as an offender, end quote. Another attendee echoed that hope by noting, quote, there is a successful way to prevent the development of problematic sexual behavior. It is not just inevitable, end quote. Evaluations from our Overview of Treatment for Children Impacted by Problematic Sexual Behavior of Children and Youth webinar also noted, quote, I thought the information was significant because it provided information on how to talk to children that have been in traumatic situations. I would apply this information if I met a child that has been through the situations mentioned in this session. As we develop our next bundle of SBCY programming, we are happy to announce that we will be releasing new learning opportunities in the form of 4 asynchronous courses. For those familiar with our recently launched 2022 MFRA, Family Wellbeing, Navigating the Social Justice Landscape, our courses will be much in the same spirit as those 3 MFRA courses. Much like our first podcast back in 2019, this episode is an introduction to the next phase of our SBCY series, the Problematic Sexual Behavior of Children and Youth Clinical Assessment and Treatment Overview course bundle. The 4 courses in the Problematic Sexual Behavior in Children and Youth Clinical Assessment and Treatment Overview courses are Course 1, Clinical Assessment of Children and Youth with Problematic Sexual Behavior. Course 2, Caregiver Engagement and Assessment and Treatment. Course 3, Clinical Decision Making and Treatment Planning. And Course 4, Monitoring Safety Planning, Supervision, and Treatment Progress. We have created these course sessions to enrichen your work and professional development. Attending any of our one-off sessions does not constitute the learner as trained or certified in that specific prevention, assessment, or treatment approach. But these webinars and courses are intended to enhance your understanding of the topics and strategies addressed in clinical assessment and treatment of problematic sexual behavior of children and youth, with expectations that the provider will seek specific advanced training for implementation of assessment and treatment of problematic sexual behavior of children and youth. Jane, if you don't mind talking a little bit about how those 4 courses shaped up and just what those conversations look like for our participants who are getting excited for the courses and to delve into that content.
Yeah, thank you. As Tib noted, there was a desire to provide more specific clinical information. They are seeing the families really wanting to have a better foundation on understanding the clinical assessment components of evidence-based treatments and the process for treatment planning. So through these dialogues and working with the course authors, we created these 4 lessons that are linked together and built upon each other for addressing assessment and treatment. And it starts with lesson 1. And lesson 1 and 2 are complete companions. That lesson 1 and 2 address conducting that clinical assessment with the child who's exhibiting problematic sexual behavior. And clinicians should know that it builds on what you already know about sound clinical assessment, gathering what are the presenting problems and concerns, what are the protective factors and strengths of the families, understanding the vulnerabilities specific to problematic sexual behavior and broadly, and being able to then use that information to inform safety planning and treatment decisions. With lesson 1, really focusing on those overview, understanding of those vulnerability factors and strengths and protective factors to consider, and how to approach the youth on this very sensitive topic to be able to engage them in this dialogue to address their understanding and being able to get the information to help with making the decisions. And then lesson 2 focuses on engaging the caregiver, gathering the information from them, but also really partnering with them, addressing their concerns, their anxieties, their questions, and supporting their safety planning to support their child early on and throughout treatment. That information from lesson one and lesson two is integrated to facilitate clinical decision making in lesson three. So lesson three will address the how to integrate the risk factors, the protective factors, the presenting problems, what you've been able to connect with the caregiver and child to then make some decisions of what components of treatment, what approach to treatment and safety planning makes the most sense for those youth. The youth come heterogeneous. So some of them come with significant trauma histories, some of them less so. Some of them have a history of behavior problems, developmental issues. All of those factors are integrated to make those clinical decision making. So there's information provided on those components of treatment to help address those topics. And then winding up of the series with lesson four, address a variety of topics and thinking about the treatment throughout and making decisions of when do you end treatment and how do you support the long-term decision-making and safety for the family. So it's working with those caregivers, working with the partners in the community, making decisions about safety and supervision planning and integrating them back into their community work. The course authors vary. We have Dr. Righthan and Julia Grimm as informing lesson one. Lesson two is led by Renee Roman. Lesson three by Dr. Ben Siegel, who's also been providing a great deal of trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapy training for the military, and then winding up in lesson four with Dr. Paul Schaller and Dr. David Kolko.
Perfect. Thank you, Jane.
I appreciate you both being here today. We're very excited for this course series. We hope it's a big hit and we get a lot of great learning out of it. So thank you both and talk soon.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you both so much for your time today and your continued expertise. You and your team have been invaluable to us being able to provide these professional development programming and meeting the needs of caring adults and practitioners supporting all children and youth. You can listen to more podcast episodes from our OneOp teams on iTunes and find a list of our podcast series at oneop.org/podcasts. And from all of us at the OneOp Family Development Team, thank you for sitting back and getting anchored with us today. This material is based upon work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense, under award number 2019-48770-30366.